Chapter 16.
I am upside down, Stiles says blearily. He blinks a little at his surroundings. He seems to be looking at a tree. Why am I upside down?
Hang on, Stiles. We're going to get you out of here.
The voice is calm and steady, with underlying notes of hysteria, so it's obviously Derek's voice. Stiles stares over at him, which is difficult, because blood is dripping into his eye. He can see a nasty gash on Derek's forehead healing as he speaks. No, he says, almost a moment too late. No, fuck no. Get out of the car. All of you, out of the car. You weren't here. I was driving by myself.
What, Stiles? Derek starts, confused, almost wounded. He's right, Scott says quickly. Look at us, Derek. In 3 minutes, none of us are going to have a scratch. Nobody's going to believe we were in the car when it crashed. We have to go. Right now. Especially you. You're not even wearing any clothes, for fuck's sake.
But... I'm fine. I'm okay, Stiles says. Get him out of here!
As things clear up, he's peripherally aware of Scott and Isaac hauling Derek out of the car. Isaac grabs the little blue vest that he had been wearing, and they hustle him away into the forest. He sees Derek cast one glance over his shoulder, and then they've vanished into the trees. He takes a deep breath and tries to center himself. The Jeep has flipped, but he's still belted in. That's why he's upside down. The damage to the car must be bad, but he doesn't smell gasoline. The main thing he remembers about the crash is that it was loud. Only a minute later, Derek comes running back up to the car with Scott in tow. Derek is now wearing the jeans and t-shirt that Isaac had been wearing.
Did you mug Isaac, steal his clothes, and leave him in the woods?
Stiles asks through the shattered window. He realizes that bits of glass are strewn everywhere. He's pretty sure that a piece is lodged in his nostril, which is extremely uncomfortable.
He offered, Derek says tersely.
Derek and I were out for a walk when we saw the crash, Scott says, in a manner of one rehearsing an explanation. We figured we would stop and help out.
Good thing, huh?
He holds up his phone and says, I called 911, and your dad.
Great, Stiles says. Get me the fuck out of here.
The Jeep's front door has been crumpled so badly that it won't open. Derek rips it clean off with a grunt of effort. Stiles wonders how they're going to explain that to the cops, then decides that he doesn't care. Scott is reaching over to undo his seatbelt, Derek's hands underneath his shoulders bracing him for when it lets go. Carefully, the two of them slide him out of the car.
Easy, easy, Scott says, as they lay him down on the ground. Stiles, tell me what hurts.
Stiles tries to do a self-assessment, which is a little difficult because everything is spinning and crazily skewed.
I think my face is bleeding, he says.
Yeah, you've got a nasty gash from some flying glass, Scott says. What else?
My leg. My left leg.
Stiles winces as Scott moves his hands down on it.
I think I banged my knee. Chest hurts a little. Not bad. Neck, too.
Probably some whiplash, Scott says. Chest might just be due to where your seatbelt caught you.
They can hear sirens now. Scott's hands are moving over Stiles' body, looking for any other injuries, while Derek hovers, scowling anxiously.
I don't think anything's broken, but we'd better not move him anymore until they get here with a C-collar, he says.
A police car and an ambulance skid up a moment later. The paramedics actually know Scott, and he gives them a brief rundown of his conclusions while they get the C-collar on Stiles.
Hey, no, I feel okay, Stiles says, trying to sit up. Really, I have no desire to go to the hospital. How's my car?
Derek and Scott both wince.
It's pretty trashed up, man, Scott says.
Fucking Jackson, Stiles growls. Fucking sorcery, fuck my life.
What on earth happened? Someone says.
And hey, it's Carmichael, Stiles' least favorite cop.
although he has been known to come through when the occasion calls for it. "My brakes failed," Stiles says. "I decided it'd be better to steer myself into a ditch than go through a red light. That way, at least I'd only total my own car."
"Uh-huh."
Carmichael taps his notepad with the butt of his pencil. "How fast were you going, son?"
"Seriously, are we doing this now?"
Derek snaps. "We need to get him to the hospital."
40, Stiles says. "I was doing 40 in a 30. Arrest me! That'd be preferable to the fucking hospital."
"Quiet, you," Scott says, helping the paramedics get him loaded onto the stretcher. "Your opinion is not being requested." Stiles huffs out a sigh, but knows better than to argue when Scott's medical expertise is being called into question. And to be fair, the hospital might have painkillers, which would be nice right now. Because now that he's noticed his leg hurts, he's realized that it hurts like a son of a bitch.
"My poor car," he moans, but stops arguing. Scott hops into the ambulance with him.
Derek is annoyed when they make him ride up front. Scott tells him that he's lucky there's room for him at all. The EMT is asking him a series of questions about what hurts and how much and can he wiggle his toes. Stiles answers all of these and then whines. "There's glass in my fucking nose, okay? Can someone please take care of that?"
Someone leans over with a pair of tweezers and extracts a piece of glass, about the size of a pencil eraser. It's stained bright red with blood.
"Why is this my life?"
Stiles mutters, as they're unloading him into the emergency room. As it turns out, one entire side of his body has been lacerated with tiny cuts from the powdered glass.
"I thought this shit was safety glass," Stiles says, looking down at his left arm, which received the worst of it, along with the left side of his face.
"I think there's limits to that kind of thing," Scott says.
"Fuck, you're shivering. You're going into shock."
"I'm not shocked. I'm not even fucking surprised. This is just my life now."
"Physical shock, you asshole. It has nothing to do with your psychological reaction to an event. Can we get a heated blanket over here?"
Scott calls to a nurse. A minute later, said blanket has been draped over Stiles.
"That's nice," he murmurs, and he can even put up with the doctor poking and prodding him, feeling at his abdomen, although fortunately through his shirt, so the nasty scars are not noticed.
"Shouldn't you be asking me if I'm pregnant?"
"Funny," the doctor says. He looks familiar. Stiles is pretty sure they've met before.
"You're a funny kid. We're going to do some x-rays of your chest and your leg, and it's possible you may have to pee in a cup, so if you do, we can check to see if you're pregnant then."
Stiles shifts a little in an attempt to determine if he pissed his pants during the accident. He feels glass grind and dig into his skin.
"I'm pretty sure there's glass in my underwear," he says. "How is that even fucking possible?"
Just as they're about to wheel him out to get his x-rays, his father comes in.
"What the hell happened?" he asks,
and the doctor is trying to deter him, trying to say that Stiles needs to go get his x-rays done, which looks like it's going to be about as successful as Tom's perpetual attempts to catch Jerry. Stiles manages to grab Sheriff Stilinski and says he'll explain, while Derek goes with Stiles to get his x-ray. The aides don't want to let Derek into the x-ray room with Stiles. Derek looks like he's about to throw a complete fit, so Stiles quickly derails him and says,
"Hey, why don't you go pick up Jack? You know, then he can stay with me while they do all this stuff."
"Who's Jack?" the aide asks, frowning.
"My service dog," Stiles says. He thinks fast as she opens her mouth.
"I didn't bring him with me because we were out in the woods playing lacrosse, and it always upsets him when I do that because I won't let him run around with me. And never mind, just Derek?"
"On it," Derek says, his voice brisk. And he exits the room.
Stiles lets out a breath and grits his teeth as the aides get him up onto the exam table. They move his leg around as gently as possible. He wonders exactly when the painkillers are going to come into play, and tries to ignore the impending feeling of suffocation that the tiny room gives him. 20 minutes later, he's back on his stretcher and parked in the hallway, which seems to be where they've decided to leave him for a little while. Scott is gone, having gone with Derek to pick up Jack so someone can hold his leash on the way in. So Sheriff Stalinski sits there and watches with a faint frown as a nurse wipes down the little cuts on Stiles' arm and face with an antiseptic wipe. Stiles hisses in pain and annoyance, but tries to keep his griping to a minimum. Derek turns up in his wolf form and his vest only a few minutes later, and tries to jump up onto the stretcher with Stiles, which scares the living daylights out of the nurse. Scott grabs him by the back of the vest just as his front paws hit the stretcher and says, "Oh no, you are not jumping up there until we know whether or not his leg is broken." Derek gives him a scowling, sullen look, but then settles down beside the stretcher instead. Scott looks over at Stiles and says, "Isaac got home okay, just so you know. Everyone's just camped out at your place for now," he adds, and Stiles gives a nod and a sigh of relief. The ER is busy, and they wind up sitting in the hallway, waiting almost an hour for the doctor to come back. This frustrates Sheriff Stalinski immensely, although at this point, they've done hospital rounds enough to know that it's typical. Finally, the doctor comes back and says Stiles' knee is badly swollen and bruised, but miraculously not broken. His chest x-ray is normal. There are no signs of any internal injuries or bleeding. He doesn't even seem to have a concussion, and the cut on his face doesn't even need stitches. They put some Steri-Strips on it and tell him they'll fall off in a few days. "You were lucky," he says to Stiles. "It could have been a lot worse." "Hey, thanks for that, Doc," Stiles says loudly. Then, under his breath, "Because nothing helps PTSD like being told you could be dead right now." He hears Derek let out a little whine and scratches him behind the ears. "How about getting me somewhere that I can get the glass out of my boxers?" They get him into the bathroom where he shakes the glass out of his clothes before putting them back on. Then he's put in a wheelchair and wheeled out to the parking lot. "Deja vu all over again," he says to his father, who doesn't look at all amused. "What? Don't make that face. I'm okay." "Tell me what happened," his father demands, slowly, in detail. Stiles knows better than to protest that Scott already gave him the lowdown. This is his father gathering evidence, being a cop, so he tells him the whole story, with as much detail as he can remember. His father shakes his head a couple of times, but doesn't comment. By the time Stiles is finished, they're back at the house. He gets fairly mobbed by the rest of the pack. Scott gets him settled on a cushion on the floor where he can properly greet and cuddle with everyone. "My poor car," he moans. "Do you even know how many research papers I had to write to buy it? It was love at first sight. What happened to it?"
"It got towed down to Mike's shop," his father tells him. "He said he would take a look at it first thing in the morning. I need to call the insurance so they can send somebody out to take a look at it. Mike's going to take a special look at the brakes to see if there's any evidence they've been tampered with."
"There won't be," Stiles says, with a sigh. He's suddenly exhausted. Every muscle in his body just aches. "I don't think magic leaves traces like that."
"We'll see," Stalinski says grimly.
"Kay,"
Stiles says, and relaxes against the cushion. Erica seizes the moment to put on My Little Pony. Stiles is asleep 10 minutes later, his back resting against Derek's chest, Erica's head on his lap, Lydia's fingers laced loosely through his own, and Isaac's head resting on his foot. For the first time in weeks, he just sleeps, without a shred of a nightmare. Physical trauma is good for one thing, it seems. He becomes dimly aware, sometime later that night, of someone carrying him up the stairs, taking off his shoes. It's far away and unimportant. When he wakes up the next morning, everything hurts. From the top of his head down to the tips of his toes, he's sore. He can barely get out of bed, but he manages it. His left leg will only barely support his weight, so he has to lean heavily against various pieces of furniture as he hobbles around.
His skin is irritated and red, even where it's not actively cut. He's got two fantastic bruises, deep purple-blue, one on his chest and the other just below his waist, where the seatbelt caught him. Those two bruises are his new best friends, because he's fairly sure they're the reason he's alive. He can't even imagine what he would look like if he had gone through the windshield. The words hamburger helper spring to mind. He decides to take a shower. For several long minutes, he just lets the water run over him, washing away any residue. Then he cleans himself up. The bubbles from the shampoo are tinged pink. When he gets out of the shower and blows his nose, a mixture of dirt and blood comes out. "Gross," he says to the Kleenex, pitching it into the trash. Everyone else is still asleep in piles in his room. A quick glance at the clock reveals that it's not even 6 a.m., but given how early he fell asleep, he's not surprised that he's awake. He decides to go downstairs and watch some TV. He thinks about baking something, but just the thought of lifting and stirring makes his muscles cringe. It's definitely going to be a day he spends on the sofa. He expects that the first floor will be empty, but his father is up, drinking coffee and filling out an incident report. He hasn't shaved, and has dark shadows under his eyes. "Hey, you," he says, when Styles comes in. "How are you feeling?" "Like I went 3 rounds with a grizzly and lost every single one," Styles says. "Jesus, I hurt." "They sent you home with some painkillers," Stilinski says. "I didn't bother with them last night because you just conked out. Let's get you some now. Are you hungry? You didn't eat dinner. I can fix you something." It's not like his father to babble like this, but Styles graciously lets that go. "Starved, actually," he says. 5 minutes later, he's settled on the sofa with a turkey sandwich, a glass of green tea, and one of the painkillers. He thinks about putting it off, but decides he hurts too much. It's not something that should make him loopy, so there's no harm in it. His father sits down on the sofa next to him with a fresh mug of coffee. Styles looks over at him and says, "You look wrecked. What are you doing up so early?" "Just didn't sleep very well," Stilinski says. "I know that feel," Styles replies, digging into his sandwich. Breakfast has never been a specialty of his father's. Given his druthers, Sheriff Stilinski would eat cold pizza or leftover Chinese food every morning. Still, a turkey sandwich is fine. He's hungry enough that he would eat just about anything. "Styles," his father says, "this is getting out of hand. You could have been killed." "Trust me, I'm well aware," Styles says. "We are just lucky that Scott had the good sense and I had the self-restraint that I wasn't going even faster than I was." "Why in God's name did you drive straight into a ditch?" Stilinski asks, sounding a little frustrated. Styles glances over and swallows another mouthful of sandwich. "Dad, I had to," he said. "The light was red. If I tried to go through the intersection, I could have hit somebody else. It was better to drive off the road, so at least only I would wind up in freaking traction." "Jesus, kid." Stilinski reaches over and tussles his son's hair. "You know what that means, don't you?"
"That my Jeep is probably totaled," Styles says gloomily.
"Well, among other things." Stilinski is quiet for a minute. "I know that what happened with Peter changed you. And I know you've been worried about doing the right thing, about crossing lines you shouldn't cross. But this, what this means is that you are way too worried about your moral compass, because you deliberately chose certain injury for yourself rather than risk possible injury for innocent bystanders. You only had a few seconds to decide, and you had to know there was at least a possibility you could make it through the intersection without hitting anyone. And what you decided, in that moment, was to protect other people. That means that in here," he reaches out and taps Styles right in the center of his chest, "you are still every bit the good kid that you've always been." Styles stares at him for a long minute, and then lets out a breath. He's almost dizzy with the relief. He can't even put into words how much he had subconsciously needed to hear that. He leans against his father, pressing his cheek into his collarbone. "Thanks, Dad." Sheriff Stilinski wraps his arms around him and holds him tight for a minute. "We are going to take care of this," he says firmly. Then he sighs. "Look, one more thing. I wouldn't bring this up now, but I have a feeling that the pack is going to be hovering for the rest of the day, week, or month, and this is something you'd probably rather discuss in private." "Oh, jeez," Stiles says. "Way to psych me out, Dad." Another sigh. "Mr. Klolenberg has brought up that it would be helpful to have a statement from a psychologist stating your need for a service dog. He finds it somewhat concerning that you aren't currently receiving any sort of therapy, and is worried that a judge might find that concerning as well." "Aw, man," Stiles whines. "Therapy? Really?" "Son," Stilinski says, "you have a service dog for a psychological disorder. That's the fact that we're trying to present. But you've never formally been diagnosed with that disorder. It probably wouldn't ever come up, but if it did..." Stiles sighs. "I guess that going to see a shrink would at least be something I could do to help," he says. He thinks about the hallucination and the auditory flashbacks he's been having, to the nightmares that are growing steadily worse. It's starting to affect his schoolwork, as much as he doesn't want to admit it. "Fine, what the hell? But I don't know how I'll translate 'kidnapped by a werewolf' to a shrink. I mean, I can only make up so much detail and still keep my stories straight." "Klolenberg gave me a list of psychologists with ties to the supernatural world," Stilinski says. "It'll mean some travel, unfortunately, but we'll have to make time for it." "Oh, great," Stiles says. "Time is something I'm just overflowing with." He sees the look on his father's face and sighs. "Fine, if it'll help." "That's my boy." Sheriff Stilinski reaches out and gives his hair another ruffle. "Now, how about we put on a movie?" That sounds okay to Stiles. His father falls asleep 10 minutes in, which Stiles had expected. He closes his eyes and nestles against him, and tries to ignore the sound of Peter's mocking laughter, ringing in his ears. The rest of the pack is shooed off to school, despite the fact that they don't really want to go. Sheriff Stilinski calls the school to explain that Stiles won't be in due to the accident, and he'll have to miss the lacrosse game that night as well. It's a big one, against a nearby rival school, and Stiles can't help but think that this played into Jackson's choice of attack. Scott and Isaac volunteer to skip it as well, in protest, but Stiles tells them to go. Allison goes to cheer on Scott, but she'll be safe in the stands because Chris is going as well, as he almost always does, mostly because he still can't quite get over the fact that his daughter is dating a werewolf. The others opt to stay home and keep a surreptitious eye on Stiles. "Well, the bad news," Stiles says around 4 p.m., "is that the insurance company is totaling out your Jeep." Stiles groans. "At Blue Book value, you'll get about $4,000 for it," his father continues, checking his notes. "The good news is, Mike thinks he can get it fixed up." He sees Stiles perk up and adds, "It still needs major body work, so it'll take time. The insurance covers a rental, so we can go pick one up for you on Monday after school. But Mike made it clear that, financially speaking, it probably would make more sense just to get a new car." "But Dad," Stiles whines, "it was assassinated in the line of duty." "I know," Stilinski says, smiling despite himself. "I told him to go ahead and start repairs. He did take a look at the brakes. Your brake line had snapped. That much is obvious. But he says they can just wear out, so there's no way to conclusively prove it was sabotage." Stiles is thinking this over. Jackson is pissed, off balance. He wants to keep him that way. "I think I might be able to handle that myself," he says. He's gotten an email from Danny which apologizes about 19 different times for the fact that Danny didn't know this was coming. Stiles doesn't blame him. He's pretty sure this was an impulsive action on Jackson's part, brought on by how angry he was at Stiles' demand to talk to Stone. The tone of Danny's email is frustrated, almost desperate. Danny knows that he's losing Jackson, that every day is another day closer to the point of no return. Stiles knows that pushing Jackson is only making things worse, but if he can push Jackson into a mistake, it may give him the ammunition he needs to save him. It's a risky strategy, but he doesn't have a better one. His mood is really not improved when his father tells him that he's scheduled him an appointment for the following Tuesday with a psychologist named Gwen Mulrooney. She's in Fresno. Kind of an odd place for a supernatural counselor, don't you think? Stiles asks, and his father shrugs. Of course, he doesn't really want to drive all the way to Los Angeles or San Francisco. And actually, Fresno sort of makes sense. A lot of supernatural creatures prefer to live in the wild. There's a huge swath of empty land near there, with Kings Canyon National Park and Yosemite, even Death Valley, on the other side of the mountains. Although, he supposes Las Vegas might be closer to that. Fresno's not exactly a small city, either. It's the fifth largest in California, a state that has a lot of large cities. He does a little research on this Gwen Mulrooney, and finds that she went to an excellent college and graduate school, and has presented several papers on counseling of teenagers, and has a specialty in PTSD. He hates her already. But if seeing her will help his father stick it to Harris, he's willing. It's better than being told there's no way he can help. He emails Danny to say that he needs to have a chat with Jackson. Privately. No lacrosse team, no parents, no anybody. Danny thinks this is a terrible idea. Stiles pushes him into it anyway. Danny reluctantly agrees, and says that Jackson's parents go to church on Sunday morning, but Jackson never goes with them, and they don't try to pressure him into it. He'll be alone at his house between 10 and 11:30. "What if he tries to kill you?" Scott asks. "I won't let him," Stiles says. The pack looks unimpressed. "Look, guys, he's fucked up here. If we can prove he messed with my car and it caused me to have a possibly fatal accident, we can get him in trouble. We can get him away from us. We can separate him from this hatred he has for us. And after that, maybe Danny or Deaton or somebody can get through to him." "Yeah, that seems likely," Isaac mumbles. Stiles sighs. "Look, I don't like the guy either. I have never liked the guy. But at least he's got his reasons to be screwed up. Danny says he's got this real perfectionist thing going on because the way his parents abandoned him and he..." "What?" Eric interrupts him. "Jackson's parents didn't give him up. They died in a car accident." Everyone blinks at her. Stiles says, "Wait, what?" "My dad was the insurance claims investigator," she says. "He talked about it once, when I was complaining about Jackson. He'd made some nasty comment about me. I don't even remember what. This was way before I was in the pack. He said it was a real tragedy. One of those no-fault accidents where they just hit a patch of black ice or something and lost control of the car. Jackson's mom was pregnant with him, and they kept her on life support long enough to get Jackson out of her." She shrugs a little and says, "I guess the Whitmores had been looking to adopt, so the hospital called them and said, 'Oh, hi, have a baby.'" "Then why the hell does Jackson think his parents dumped him?" Allison asks, frowning, perplexed. "I imagine that's something we would have to ask him," Stiles says. "Let's leave it for now. That's a pretty big thing, and throwing it at Jackson right now could make things even worse than they already are. I'll do a little research to confirm. No offense, Erica. I just want to have all my ducks in a row." "As you always do," she teases, giving him a quick kiss on the cheek. Clearly not at all offended. He's feeling a little better Saturday. Still stiff and sore, but his accelerated healing is taking care of the injuries, and he can move around again. He still isn't sleeping well, and Derek's plan of having him work out or go running before he tries has been delayed thanks to the car crash. He took an Ambien Friday night and spends most of Saturday morning feeling like a zombie. He doesn't dare take one Saturday night because he wants to be alert for his conversation with Jackson. Stiles rings the bell, and Jackson answers it a few moments later. He's by himself, although several of the wolves are lurking, ready to rush to his rescue if anything should happen. But he wants to look non-threatening right now. He wants Jackson to be off his guard. The other teenager's lip curls. "What do you want?" he asks belligerently. "I want to talk to you about why you fucked with my brakes," Stiles says. Jackson laughs at him. "Yeah? Is that what you think happened?"
"Dude, Jackson, I know it was you," Stiles snarls at him. "I just had the damn Jeep serviced a few weeks ago. I think they would have fucking noticed if something was wrong with my brakes."
"Yeah? So what?" Jackson asks, smirking at him.
"So, you've made this about more than just you and me," Stiles says. "Innocent people could have been hurt. You're goddamn lucky that I had the sense to steer my car off the road instead of plowing through a red light."
"Look, little man," Jackson says, leaning against the doorframe. "You're making a huge mistake if you think I give a damn."
"Is this about Lydia?" Stiles asks.
"What? I am so over that bitch," Jackson says.
"Oh, really?"
Stiles replies. "Is that why you slipped her a fucking roofie and tried to score with her?" Jackson just laughs. "Lydia would tell a different tale."
"Lydia's not telling any damn tales at all because she has no fucking memory of what happened that night,"
Stiles says. The word's practically a growl.
"If Danny hadn't called me to come get her?
Oh no, she might have actually enjoyed getting laid for once," Jackson says. "It's not like you lay the pipe, right?" There's a long pause as Stiles fights for composure. The conversation is going about as well as he could hope, and it's important that he doesn't lose his temper. Jackson needs to feel like he's winning, so ripping his head off is not an option. It's like the fight with Harris. He has to take the high ground, be the bigger man. Finally, he says,
"What is up with you, man? You've always been a douche, but not like this. Never like this. You could have gotten me killed with that stunt with my brakes, and you know that. You're not a fucking idiot."
"Yeah, well, I wouldn't have cried at your funeral," Jackson says. And then, there it is. "So I fucked with your brakes. Why don't you prove it?"
"Challenge fucking accepted, jackass," Stiles says.
He turns and walks away, and hears Jackson slam the door behind him. He trots down the street to where Derek is waiting in the Camaro.
"Did you get all that recorded?" Derek asks.
Stiles grins and holds up his cell phone.
"Oh yeah," he says. "I got it."